I see what you did there.
Live every day talking about HR with the people who are getting it done. So let's get to our guest, because he definitely is one of the smartest people on his street in Austin, Texas, I might add. So brilliant.
I verified that, actually.
Good. I'm glad you did the research and put some actual science behind this. So Brian Chaney, welcome on to Drive Through HR.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Brian. This won't get confusing at all with the two Brians.
No, Brian, it will not, Brian. So, if you would introduce yourself, you Brian, not me. I already did that. So, introduce yourself to our 7 trillion guests. That listen in, guests, not audience, guests. We're guests now. Our family. Introduce yourself to our family, and then we'll roll with the big question from there.
Fantastic. So, I am. I've been in the recruiting game for about 9 years, and actually came to recruiting from the marketing world. So my mind tends to go visual and with a marketing bend to it. Naturally. So I basically solve recruiting problems, mostly talent acquisition, attraction, and I've done that for a few different companies, been in the RPO space as well as the corporate world for recruiting. And I one of my big passions is talking to candidates like they're humans. I know it's crazy.
Well, that is kind of crazy. And you consult. So I want to ask this two different ways. What's keeping you up at night, and also what's keeping your clients up at night? So take either one and kind of run with them.
So most of what keeps my clients up at night is not currently how to get more people, but it's how to get the right people to respond. And from a recruiting perspective, a lot of the candidates that have their information on the grid, they're inundated on a daily basis with opportunities and, a great role and all these things that we try to make sound sexy. And most of us just, and by us, I mean people in recruiting, just fail miserably at it. And I think the problem behind that is looking at our audience or our candidate prospects as prospects and thinking about things from their perspective. And so I think that's one of the things that people have a hard time doing, because they're too busy sitting in their own seat, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. What's keeping you up at night?
For me, it's more of an up at night, because I'm excited, because I'm currently working on a decoder ring, if you will, for those who may read comics, so that these specific things about how we communicate the value of working with an organization or in a specific role, how this decoder ring can be leveraged to hit those right notes, so that people can actually hear what's going on, because a lot of times we just tune everything out. It's like the commercials. When you're flipping the TV channels, you just start tuning everything out every now and then. Something will grab you, but it's rare. Most of the people are hitting the fast forward button on the DVR.
Very cool. All right, I got a question. Actually, from the Twitter stream, it's auditing and employment brand. When you kind of start that type of work, when someone asks you, hey, take a look at our employment brand, I know you get asked this, let me pick your brain, let me take you out to lunch, let's brainstorm, whatever. When you look at someone's employment brand, where do you start the audit, maybe not the official audit process, but in your mind, where do you start that process when you just kind of tear down and build back up someone's employment brand?
So I think there's a little bit of online investigation that you can do through some of the main channels being Twitter, Facebook, Glassdoor, and then there are even specific forums depending upon what skill set that company is notorious for hiring. So people talk, people use that channel to talk about where they should work, where they shouldn't work, and the old tried and true one, a company's in trouble if you Google company name and the word sucks, and you get lots of results.
Interesting. All right. Let's do a quick break. You've got a webinar coming up on Thursday. Before we get to the end of the show, what's the webinar on Thursday? A, point us to some type of website or some place on the internet where people can take a look at it. And more importantly, tell us what it's about.
So the webinar that I'm thanks, by the way. The webinar I'm doing on Thursday is around specific messaging and how to leverage content marketing, how to use some of these tools that corporate marketing Madison Avenue have leveraged over the years and gotten a lot smarter about delivering messages, making them feel more one-on-one, and I'm going to be walking through a case study in that webinar around defining that persona and figuring out not how to message those people and how not to go nuts on social media thinking that you got to just spend a crazy amount of time there. Or creating and curating this content. There are a lot of automated tools that can help do that in a short amount of time. So that's what I'm going to be talking about on Thursday. And actually, if you go to my Twitter handle, which is just Brian Chaney, BrianChaney, there are a couple of links to sign up for the webcast. The webcast is actually free. It's sponsored by SuccessFactors, and really it's just about marketing and the people who care about really reaching their audience.
Nice. As you mentioned social recruiting, I need to stop down and ask you a question about that, of course. What are some of your pet peeves with social recruiting?
The pet peeves is that recruiting has always been social, and I think we have tried to, and I'll use a $5 word here, we've tried to disintermediate ourselves from the process using social channels. And all that really means is we've spent the last 10 years removing ourselves from the one-on-one relationship, and we've spent the last 5 trying to figure out how to squeeze back into that conversation. And if you just approach social recruiting, through the social channels, just like you would if you talk to a person, there are so many things that you can learn from just by approaching it like a human. I know there's a lot of that's a kind of a generality, but if you approach it conversationally instead of like you're talking to a machine, then there are a lot of things that people can, I would say, relearn for those who were recruiters. Before social recruiting became a big buzzword.
Nice. I really like that, actually. Jerome Ternick of Smart Recruiters and I talked about that years ago about social and recruiting, and he's like, there's nothing new here, in his own French accent, which I can't do very well. But he was just like, social's always been, recruiting's always been social. Like, these new technologies are just fancy way of doing kind of old hat things. But let me get back to employment branding for just a second. your kind of start, stop, continue around employment branding? And again, this is dovetailed nicely with the webinar that you're going to be doing on Thursday. What are some of the things that, as you describe that to people that maybe have not as much knowledge as you do about employment branding, what should we stop doing? What should we start doing? And what should we continue doing as it relates to employment branding?
So I think we should stop trying to create an employment brand because I actually sat on a roundtable earlier this year at the ERE conference in San Diego, and there were a bunch of recruiting leaders, and the topic was employment branding, and they were all trying to figure out how to create their employment brand. And it was a roundtable, so when it got around to me, I said, you know, you can't create an employment brand. You can reveal an employment brand. So the only way to really create an employment brand is to change the employment experience. And it's a much longer process, and there are so many more people involved. It's more than just, for lack of a better phrase, slapping lipstick on a pig and calling it Vanna White. That's my stop request for employment branding, and I think people need to start feeling comfortable turning the microphone around for their employees so that they can tell the story, because the employees are going to tell the story in a way that your prospects are going to listen to and respect a heck of a lot more than what's on your corporate careers blog.
Sure. And, Brian, let me do a quick reset. Everybody listen, Drive Through HR, William and Brian talking with Brian Chaney. So kind of staying with the same lane here, what are some of the silver bullets that people, you know, that people actually just need to do every single day within driving culture? Because we're talking ultimately, when you're talking brand, I mean, you're just talking about what exactly is our company like to work for? Why do people like to work here? I mean, it's a culture question, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. What do people need to start doing just every day? Show up and do, here are the one or two things, and you'll actually have something that people want to come work for.
Wow, so that's a really big question, because that's more on an internal culture brand, right? So that's around the experience itself. What are some of the things that companies can do to improve the experience, or what are some of the things that companies can do to really shine a light on the experience? Which one were you talking about?
You choose whichever your heart leads you to.
Smart man. And the reason I ask is because changing that experience, there are so many different ways to engage people in their work. But I think approaching the storytelling of that employment experience is really important on a daily basis. As a marketer, I curate content all the time around a specific audience. You know, the audience changes, but I think I'm thinking about what drives that audience, what their motivators are, what they care about, and I'm filtering the things that I'm reading. I'm constantly reading and looking at updates, looking at news, talking to people, and I'm filtering all that communication through that audience filter. And obviously, that changes from time to time. And the ultimate audience filter is yourself, right? What you care about. But as a marketer, I like to switch that up and think about things from the other perspective. So as I'm living my life, as I'm working, as I'm going through the day-to-day working on projects, as I come across something that fits that filter or that comes through that filter because of, you know, those specific motivators, then it's a whole lot easier for me to capture that and shine a light on it. So from an employer perspective, if I know that some of the toughest people to recruit care about they care about innovation within the company. Innovation is a big driver or motivator for that specific talent group. Then I will filter all the conversations that I'm having through that filter and looking for innovation, ways that we can tell that story And once you do that, then it makes it a whole lot easier because people think about, oh, I've got to be thinking like a marketer. No, you don't. You've got to be thinking like you actually care about the things that your employees are doing and saying on a daily basis. So it's being taking that different approach. There's hey, do I want to think of myself as a marketer? No, I want to think of myself as really more of an ambassador for the company.
Got it. So it comes down to the give a shit factor is what we're talking about a little bit. So I've got a completely kind of a one-off question. So do you think there's value in teaching people how, like on HR teams, marketing teams, how to actually tell a story? I've been thinking a lot about this question for just seeing how people aren't able to convey some of the things and tie it all together. Do you think there's value in that?
I think there's value in storytelling in just about every single line of work, because you always have to convey, the what, the how, the where, the why, and the when. You always have to convey all those depending upon what's more important at the moment. And if you can't tell that story in a way that relates to the audience, to the people that you're trying to communicate with, whether that's whether you're selling something, whether you're talking about an ATS implementation, whether you're talking about some other aspects, if you can't tell a story in a way that interests and really engages your audience, then you're not going to get a whole lot done.
Nice. Brian, let me add, I've got this thought about the most front line of your positions. So take any company, the most front line of those positions, that person is your culture. So first of all, whoever that is, if it's the person answering the phone, if it's the receptionist, if it's somebody in a call center, whatever, like your culture isn't hidden. It isn't held by six dudes back at your corporate headquarters. Your culture is, in my head at least, the most front line of your positions. A, do you believe that? And B, if so, how do we get people to understand that?
Well, I think that person, the front line culture position, is going to look different based on what the company does and based on the big drivers. The roles within the company that are either the money makers or the innovators, the people that really drive success for that company. So in one company, that could be customer service, and that customer service could be the frontline culture position. And in another company, the frontline culture could be, that's more tech-focused, could be the engineers. So that piece is going to change, a lot of times we like to generalize and say that the same thing is true across lots of different companies. Oh, well, so it's always the receptionist when you walk in the door, or it's the person answering the customer service calls, or it's the person on live chat, or it's the it's the way that those people are connected to through whatever channel. I think that's the tough part is getting companies to figure out what their big drivers are, and focusing on that. Does that help? I know there were a couple other layers to that question.
No. It absolutely does. In your line of work, do you think that culture changes either ever so slightly or immensely on every single hire or every transition? So if someone leaves the culture and you add someone to the culture, do you believe that the culture has changed, or do you believe that, really it's kind of like a cruise ship? It kind of moves, and very slow and kind of, one leaving, one adding. Is it really going to change the culture all that much, et cetera? Like, what's your take on that?
My take on that is I'm going to go Disney on you here for a minute. So I think that the little teacup ride at Disney World is how the culture changes within an organization. And I'll clarify that. So a little teacup ride, you've got this carousel and all these little teacups that are on it, and these individual teacups are spinning independent of the entire thing moving, right? And I think that the culture change is like changing each individual turn in one of those teacups. I don't think hiring one person unless it's a leadership position in just about any department. I think it's more like changing one of those little micro cultures, because an experience for an engineer is going to be the experience that person has working with the engineering team, working with all the different factors, the operational people that interact with that person. And so I don't think one person is going to change the entire culture. I think making a lot of smart hires will change the culture over time for the better. And I think it's really centered around those little microcosms of culture and experience. If that makes sense.
No, it totally does. Let me ask you a question. Now, this is again from the Twitter sphere. Recruiting and marketing, in broad terms, what do you think that we can learn from one another? What can marketing learn from recruiting, and what can recruiting learn from marketing?
Well, I think, as we said before, recruiting has always been social, and it's always been about the experience and getting as close to that one-to-one, messaging or one-to-one communication. We're having a conversation, person to person. Unless somebody is just unplugged and not paying attention, that's really the best way to get something across. And the further we get away from the one-to-one concept, or talking to each other like we're individuals, then the harder it is to convey that information, whether it's talking about the value that a company brings, whether it's talking about what an employment experience looks like, whether it's selling a product. I think that's probably the biggest thing that recruiting and marketing are learning from each other, is how to scale that one-to-one conversation.
Nice. That is genius. Back to culture. We're pinging back and forth here, but back to culture. Hiring to your values. So there's a lot of the discussion that's been going on in terms of, what are your values? What are your corporate values? How do you use that as kind of a sifter in which to hire and fire, make decisions, et cetera? How do you advise people to do that? I don't want to make the assumption that you do. Do you advise? And if so, how do you get people to kind of put their values first?
The values are going to change by each hire in those little microcosms that we talked about. So I think it's more important that a hire within, and I'll go back to the engineering hire, a hire within the engineering department is focused on technology and innovation, and values that kind of thinking. Whereas someone in a different department would need to value patience, would need to value persistence and understanding, like somebody in customer service. So I think it can be done. But from an advice standpoint, it's always a funny thing. Telling people how to hire is like telling people who they should date. It's a tough conversation unless you've already got a lot of trust built up.
Nice. All right, I need to ask you a question about veterans. I know you do a lot of good work trying to get veterans, trying to get people to kind of break down the barriers in the hiring process and to hire more veterans. I know you're very active in Austin and even nationally in terms of the dialogue around hiring these men and women that have chose to serve our country, and some of which are coming back from war and need to get back into the workforce. So if you don't mind, tell us a little Tell us a little bit about how you got involved with that and even some of your current progress.
So I've never been in the military, but my my father and my brother have, and so I have a deep appreciation for military veterans for lots of different reasons. And I feel like there are a lot of misunderstandings around skill sets, miscommunications even, between recruiting and hiring authorities and veterans themselves, even with veteran support groups. And so my passion has really been around helping them communicate better and really showcasing some of those leadership qualities. But there's a difference when you're talking to a military veteran, there's a difference in their idea of getting it done. Because if you talk to and I'll paint with a broad stroke here for a second, you know, I think we've all come across people who might be a little flaky, who don't really have determination or resolve to follow something through to completion. And that's just not how most military veterans operate. They go until the job is done, whatever that takes. And so there's a completely different level of personal grit there, and I think really conveying that and really dispelling some of the myths around PTSD, around any other confusion or paranoia that hiring authorities may have when it comes to veterans. So I think continuing to give them tools and channels to communicate better with each other is something that I'll be a fan of probably till the day I die.
Well, and Brian, and definitely I echo the sentiment of William and Nisha relative to it's super important. I am former military, and I did a lot back when I was in the corporate world to try and just find people and let them transition, because it's a really difficult transition. And here's the one thing that I'll share with everybody, just to kind of add on to the work that Brian's doing, is the fact that you go from people that are completely have full accountability to let's get this done and have a level of being in charge. I mean, you're leading a small group, a big group, and then you step back into now you're potentially management or a worker bee, and it's not everything is very gray versus very SOP driven. The military is very specific, and you learn that, and that's what they deprogram in the first 4 months when you're in basic and AIT, is we have a process, and you follow the process, and the process builds to the entire organization, all the way to the top, right? That's a tough bridge, and so just keep doing what you're doing, and it's amazing, amazing work, and it's definitely necessary. And so thank you so much. One more. We're just about out of time. So I want to make sure and tell folks again where they can connect with you and share the webinar that you've got coming up. Thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely. So the webinar that I'm doing on Thursday is I actually just tweeted out with the DriveThruHR hashtag a link to the webinar. So that should be pretty easy to find. And you can always connect with me if you want. My personal URL is about.me/BrianChaney altogether. I also want to thank you for your service, Brian, because that's actually something that we actually haven't got a chance to talk about is your military service. So I appreciate that as well.
Well, it's man, it was good, and it was good seeing you actually in person this week. And for sure, we need to make that more of a habit versus the occasional happening. So really, really enjoyed it. You know what, folks? Tune in. Check out the webinar. This guy's got mad skills. Follow him. He's, talk. It's always good. I always learn something and get a little more inspired. So, okay, folks, we're out of here, and we're going to roll out with some cool music. clicks.